This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host. Over these past weeks, we've alternated between important American composers and prominent instrumentalists and conductors. We just finished a two-part composer chat with David Amram, so this week we'll visit with a fascinating pianist for the second time, Anna Maria Markovina, born in Croatia. She studied in Russia and then in Vienna with Paul Bedoya Skoda before settling in Germany and into a career that has led her curiosity to explore many of the forgotten and untraveled paths of piano repertoire. When we spoke with her last, it was her interest and love in the works of Johann Sebastian Bach's oldest son, Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, that led to a monumental recording accomplishment. My guest had back then released on the German Hensler label the complete keyboard works of C.P.E. Bach. This was done with major corporate and archival support, and with the help of the Bach Archive Leipzig. And the result was a box set of 26 CDs, over 36 hours of music, 300-plus works, and a 350-page booklet covering 44 years of C.P.E. Bach's life. You're listening to the opening Allegro movement from a sonata in G minor from 1746 by C.P.E., as performed from that massive CD set by my guest. But she has also turned her attention to other little-known composers, as we'll hear in this visit, and her latest recording, just hitting the market now, are the complete solo piano works of a composer who is never thought of in the realm of solo keyboard music, rather known for his gargantuan symphonies. More about him later. Anna Maria Markovina and I caught up with one another again in New York City a few weeks back.
Thank you. here once again with pianist Anna-Maria Markovina. It's been 3 years since we spoke, and that was by phone, and we are here in New York City. At that time, what had just been released onto the public was your 26 CD set of CPE Bach, everything he put down on paper that could be played by a keyboard. It was a really great accomplishment. There's so many treasures in there. As we talked last time, just to make this composer a little bit more respected for what he did, you know, and a little bit better known. So let's bring our listeners up to date. So since then, how did the release of that, even to this day, how did it kind of maybe change your career? How did it focus on his music? Do you still play his music? I mean, what's been the aftermath of that whole CP Bach edition?
There has been a lot of result effect. I'm playing CPE recitals all over and giving lectures in all possible languages. Last week I had my first lecture in French, 20 minutes.
You speak 5 languages, right?
7 actually,
okay,
but
sorry.
I'm not lecturing in all languages. I'm not bold enough for that. But that was new and it was in Arles. It was very, very nice there. Still, I'm a little bit exotic with my CPE. One of the German broadcast station, I don't know how you call it, the Hessische Rundfunk,
the radio stations,
They called me Bach Prophetin because I don't have many followers in playing CPE. So if somebody wants CPE, then somehow it's connected with me.
I mean, we talked at the time, there were some other pianists who had recorded some CPE and were doing volumes, but you just did this, as we would say, chunk of everything. Here it is, you know,
But if you want to put an egg into motion, you take a certain energy, and you need the same energy to stop the egg. And so in a way, you can say that I'm quite lazy because I can't stop. Once I'm in motion and once I start to work, it's very hard to stop. Yeah, that's it. And I did the CPE in 13 months. Everybody asked me how I did it, but actually this was very natural.
I was just playing. That's how you think, and that's how you wanted to do that.
So after that, I had a little break, and I needed a break also to know what my life, my musical life, is leading to, and to gather myself and to understand things a little bit better. And I wrote a book. I finished it.
Okay.
And I'm writing now a doctorate, and I have a lot of new projects. So I can identify with that. That's important.
Well, I want to get into the piano projects, but we should also, we talked about this a little bit on the last program as well, but your interest in psychology with your husband and stuff, and you give lectures that are really about, I don't want to say testing, but you're looking at results of sort of scientific problems you put out there. Many of them have to do with music, I think.
How do you say that? In Germany, I would say bunter Vogel. I'm a colored bird in my scene.
Right.
Yeah, I don't follow the reasonable path so much.
Right.
Because actually my field is more the philosophical psychology than the measurable psychology. And I want to be in the old way understanding.
Yeah.
This is hermeneutic. Say that? Hermeneutic? This is the interpretation of things. So what I'm interested in is to understand and to come to certain conclusions.
Okay.
So this is the work I do.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, when I finished this book, this was actually after CPE, I needed to write. It was really a need and urgence. And I wrote quite quickly. So I finished everything with 300 pages and it's coming out soon. And the whole work is about, you have no idea how you can develop when you play the piano and what you can learn about yourself.
Hmm.
About how you cope with doing mistakes, how you cope with being different, how you cope with being alone, how you cope with planning your day, how you cope with planning your life, working plans, and all these parameters which make a personality, you can train at the piano. So that was 2 years that I took to put that down.
So how playing the piano or any instrument really can shape you in society and shape your behavior and make you the person you are. It's going to be a reflection of what you're spending your time on in this case.
Yeah, and I do that quite specific.
Yeah, so. Okay.
And Carl Philipp, he was a dear friend, and he is a dear friend, and the big love of my life. I can't really find myself again so close to a composer after this this working period, because I was playing him for 10 years, but then with the recording, somehow we grew together. And everything after didn't feel so good, I have to say. So I took a little bit of time. It took me 2.5 years for off a break to the next recording.
To the next recording. That is a long time.
One more selection from my guest Anna Maria Markovina's 26-CD set of the complete keyboard works of C.P.E. Bach, one of the many character pieces where C.P.E. was painting in music friends, acquaintances, or stereotypes. This one is singular, called Lali Rupalik, sometimes known provisionally as La Bach, thought to be a caricature of the composer himself and the Bach household where he grew up.
One of the hallmarks of your career, though, is that repertoire choice. I mean, you've got a huge repertoire. And I remember from last program we did a couple years ago that, like, your concerto list is, like, 60, something like that, somewhere?
Yeah.
Give or take.
It's much more now.
Much more now.
I'm going toward 80.
But at the time, 3 years ago, like, some war horses, what we would call war horses, were missing. You didn't even really care to play those.
Yeah, because somebody else take care of them. They don't
sure,
need
they
me.
Do.
Yeah. For example, right now I recorded the Krieg Concerto with the Schleswig-Holsteinische Landesorchester and Peter Sommerer. We were thinking what to put on the CD, yeah? So in all the times, there always been one side of the LP is the Schumann Concerto and the other one is the Krieg Concerto.
Right.
Yeah, and if you want to do something unusual, you put on that. I chose the Berwald Concerto.
Yeah.
So this is coming out. And I make these choices because I'm interested in the music, and then you put them one besides the other, Grieg and Berwald, and then you understand why everybody plays Grieg and nobody plays Berwald. There is a reason.
Time will prove that theory right.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
Not everybody was wrong over the centuries.
That's
yeah.
true, that's true. Let's go there, because what you've done through your recording projects and is you've exposed listeners to other facets of composers. Hugo Wolf, we know for the Lieder, piano music of Hugo. Now, Bruckner, we're going to get back to the Bruckner, but I want to go to the unknowns, too, because you've also opened ears to people, Luisa Adolfa Lebeau, who had even heard of this before you sat down in the studio and started playing the music.
Yeah.
And when we spoke last time, you had just started this project with Anton Ursbruch.
Yeah.
Kind of an academic, hung out in Frankfurt, took lessons from Liszt. You Well, go back there. We just touched on it because you were just putting these recordings out 3 years ago. Who he is, how you found him, and what is there in the music that you've now recorded all his piano music.
So let's say if CPE is the big love of my life, with Ursprung, I have a very close relationship. Ursprung is a passion.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't leave me cold, and I have to play it. It's mostly when I play this music, is more an urgence than a choice. Because I don't care so much about the market, as you know, and I can think what will be sold better, because if I start to think about these things, then I lose immediately. So right. I don't even think about it. But when I have to play something, I have to. And Ursprung is also an old story, because it was, I think, now 12 years ago that I read the biography of Liszt, and the name occurred to me. And in the same period of few weeks, I got a phone call of his granddaughter, who is now 88 years old and living in Münster, Dr. Hey, Veronika Kircher.
Is that a coincidence, or had she heard?
No, these are okay. The things in life.
Which, okay.
Yeah. And she asked me if I'm interested in the music of Anton Ursprung, and I said, yes, I'm just reading about him and just trying to find his music. And how do you find me? Yeah, because you play this odd things, and perhaps you would be interested in a composer who is absolutely unknown. And said, yes, I'm interested.
And the
then she sent me this course, and I got the package. It was just copies, because it's not edited. It came from the university library in Frankfurt, and I tried to sight read it, and I'm quite good in sight reading. I can prima vista. Yeah. Not with Anton Ursprung. Yeah, it was a bit like a jungle. Wow. And you don't see the path, you don't see the melody, you don't know. You understand very quickly that some fingers are missing on my two hands, and 10 fingers are not enough. And I understood very quickly that this will be a real challenge. Hmm. So I kept fire and I started to work on it. And then in 2010, I brought out my first Ursprung recording, which was really, really highly acclaimed, mostly by piano lovers,
right.
Because they
say,
wow, finally deep, late romantic music. Yeah. And so the critics have been very, very good. And then I stopped with Ursprung, because to prepare this, it needs hundreds of hours. So I needed a break from him. And then, after Carl Philipp, the urgence came back to play this dense and wild and dark green music. Yeah. So I dived into it again, and Hensler is anyway a very, very dear editor, very, how can I say, fervent, supporting me, in bringing things out. And it can't be enough from him, and I have to say that I'm very, very grateful. Who can say that this nowadays, that the editor said, oh, please, deliver. Then we made the appointment with the Bayerische Rundfunk, and I had the same team, like very good team, and I recorded the Variations Opus 10 and the Deutsche Tänze Opus 7 and one very wild and extremely virtuoso piece. And it was a lot of fun. Very happy about it.
Just to stick with him for a second, why the obscurity? Do you have any? Because music changed over the first years of the 20th century. Was he caught in that? I mean, or was it because he was provincial in Frankfurt? And
no, he was not so provincial. He was even performed in Rome, and he had quite a name, because when he was young, he had the reputation to be the best student of Franz Liszt.
Mm-hmm.
Franz Liszt wrote a lot of letters praising him. He was the colleague of Clara Schumann, he was teaching, he was composing, but I like to say that he should have a better PR agent. Yeah,
okay.
He misunderstood certain things. Liszt, his teacher, was a genius, and he wrote difficult music to play, but not so difficult as it sounds.
Right.
The effect is much bigger. And Anton Ursprung does the opposite. Yeah, he does the other way around. This is what he misunderstood. Yeah? You shouldn't write more difficult than it sounds.
Right.
It's not smart. And I think this was his problem, that simply he didn't write not three bars which are easy to play. Nobody could just learn him. Like you learn the lyric pieces by Grieg, and then you get appetite, and then you want to study the big pieces.
Right.
Yeah. With Ursprung, you have immediately to study the little, most little and easiest piece. You need hours and hours and hours to understand. So who should go into it? Yeah. Right.
So the mistake he made music that turned pianists off because of the time they'd have to put in on it before it could even reach a public, before it could reach ears. So you're right, that's the wrong way around. But you persisted.
Yeah. Yeah, when I start, that's what I said, it's very hard to stop. I'm happy with the result. I like more to listen to it than to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can enjoy this unbelievable music without always playing it again and again. I don't play it so much in the concert, I have to admit.
Yeah. It's always the transition of recording it, but then also getting it played live in recitals and have other pianists picking it up.
So we'll hear music of Anton Ursprung a little later, but my guest has also released a CD on the Genuine label of music by the very little-known 19th-century German composer and pianist Luise Adolphe Lebow, who studied with another great pioneering woman, musician of her day, Clara Schumann. From the CD of all of Miss Lebow's works for piano, here is her Abendklänge, or Evening Sounds, as performed by my guest today, Anna Maria Markovina. The Abendklänge, or Evening Sounds, of German composer-pianist Luise Adolphe Lebow, from a CD of all her piano works released on Genuine label and performed by my guest today as we revisit with pianist Anna Maria Markovina. So my guest's latest CD, just now hitting the market on the Hensler Classics label, presents the music of a composer not known at all for music for the solo piano. Here is his Stille Betrachtung on einem Herbstabend, Considering an Autumn Evening.
The piano music of Anton Bruckner. Okay, Bruckner, the symphonist. For those that know more of his music and are fortunate to know more of his music, some beautiful choral music. If you want to go even deeper, there's some chamber music. And then there's this piano music. Much of it is young, from his younger years. Nothing was young about Bruckner, but I mean, from his beginning years. Again, how to know this music, why this music, I mean...
Sometimes, I'm not always so stubborn as I seem. Sometimes I got advice or questions. And the question was made by Günther Hensler. He asked me, what do you think about Bruckner? So he starts sometimes and I said, I love him. Do you know his piano music? No. And immediately my ears went up like a German Shepherd dog. And I wanted to see what he wrote. And on the first impression, I was very disappointed because it's simple. And you cannot guess the big symphonic genius behind it. I mean, not immediately. But again, it's a challenge, and I like challenges. And then he told me, Günther told me, that recently, means 2 years ago or something, the sketches from Kitzler's Studienbuch were found. There was the last manuscript by Bruckner in private possession.
Okay.
Property, I don't know. He asked me if I can come to this and if I could have a look on this because he wants to bring it out. So I did my best and I found that the Bruckner Gesellschaft in Vienna brought out only the facsimile. They didn't want to print it, and they don't want to print it because they say these are studies, these are sketches, and we want the few people who are really interested in Bruckner, we want them to follow his handwriting and not just to play the notes he wrote. So we want to have the authentic impression, and we bring it out as it is with the coffee mark spot, crossed bars, and etc., etc. He writes sometime. So I bought this facsimile and I started to learn. And the first thing is that what was fascinating for me is that somebody who brings out this symphonic music has such a complex of minority. Oh. He was very self-conscious. He was unsure. He was not successful with women. He was begging for attention. He was not a superior, free genius, how you imagine, for example, Beethoven.
Right.
Yeah, was the opposite. And then I wanted to learn about him and I wanted to crawl into his music. So who are you, Anton, the other Anton? And then I found the treasure. And the treasure is that he can express very clearly what he thinks and what he feels with little notes. There is something like the origin of the truth in the music, yeah? When you just play two chords and you know this is big music and you can make, I don't know, a million notes and you think, yeah, okay. Right. And this is what I found in Bruckner, yeah? He writes dances, pure joy of life. He writes meditation on a stille Betrachtung an einem Herbstabend, quiet
contemplation on an autumn evening.
Yeah. And it goes under my skin. It kept me completely. So it was again that I had the luck when I'm thinking about it, reading about it, going into the music, I can just play it. I didn't have any doubts at the end. Interesting was to read the handwritings, and I had help transmitting it into computer written notes so I can practice it. And he wrote, for example, two very virtuoso piano etudes. Yeah, just for fun. Yeah, they're not really playable.
Right.
So, but okay, this, I have to go through this.
We should put these in context of his life. Most of this stuff, as I said, Bruckner, we're not talking about anything written in his teenage years. He's in his 30s, his late 20s, 30s when he's writing this piano music, right?
Yeah, it was not even. He was in the mid of 30s.
Yeah.
When he worked on his first symphony, and he decided again to be a pupil. So he took lessons with Otto Kitzler.
Right.
And this, about 16 pieces, which is a world premiere, he did as a homework. Yeah, go home and write an etude, and go home and write a 16 bars phrase. and the menuet and this and that. And I was deeply impressed that at that time, somebody in the mid-30s, which other composers, they hardly lived so long, yeah?
Right.
They have been already accomplished and transcendent and everything, Schubert and Liszt and Mendelssohn, poor. And so Bruckner was a very mature personality when he went to school again. And what can come out? Very good music.
He never really went back to writing anything for solo piano. You can find the Bruckner symphonies for two hands or four hands, but those are not his work. Those are people who took his symphonies and arranged them as Liszt did.
Yeah.
But he never really went back for anything with a solo keyboard once the symphonies were coming out.
Right, because when he started to work, he wouldn't stop. And he wrote one symphony after the other, and this was fantastic. And then what is also fascinating is his Catholicism in the music, his deep belief. You find that always in his symphonies, and you find it somehow also in the piano music. You find that there. And it is touching.
So let's dip into this recording of piano music by Anton Bruckner with my guest Anna Maria Markovina, and let's go dancing with this awkward Austrian symphonist. Here's a set that begins and ends with waltzes, and in between you'll hear a polka and a minuet and trio.
let's talk about one more, because I guess there's a project for you to also record the piano music of Mendelssohn. Now, the piano music of Mendelssohn has been recorded, but there's somebody who I was talking about before. You can go to 100 piano recitals, and you won't hear a single piece of Mendelssohn piano music on those piano recitals. So why is that? I mean, it's strange. And again, it might just be he's surrounded by Beethoven, Chopin, Schumann, and Schubert, but still.
Yeah, I caught fire also with Mendelssohn. The idea came from Günther Hensler, but he just needed a little push for me. I played always the old piano concerti. I played his music. Now I'm in it, and I cannot understand. Again, I have the case, I cannot understand why people don't play him. The Rondo Capriccioso they play, yeah, good.
When they play the songs without words, as encores or something like that.
Yeah, sometimes. He does deserve more. And first of all, he was the one who pulled J.S. Bach from the oblivion.
Yeah.
And because of him, C.P.E. Bach was forgotten. So here's the connection, and I want to understand also
this.
This
is a cyclic program, folks. We're coming around to the beginning again. Okay, got it.
And there is the old German tradition. He's from Leipzig, yeah. This Berlin-Leipzig tradition and Hamburg, also the connection. I find a lot of parallels to C.P.E. Bach. Then I'm completely fascinated by Mendelssohn's personality so much, because he's the only composer who, let's say, had it easy in life. Yeah, he was rich and he had a wonderful education and a philosophical education. His grandfather was Moses Mendelssohn, and nothing was missing in this life. Because, you know, Bertrand Russell said once, to be a big artist, it needs to have had a bad childhood. And Mendelssohn had a wonderful childhood.
Right.
So what is his problem? He doesn't have any, and this is the problem. And I wanted to come, I wanted to open this secret.
Nothing against Mozart or others, but Mendelssohn was probably, if not the greatest prodigy ever to be born,
definitely,
as far as music. Plus, he also worked really hard. He worked himself to death, basically,
right.
You know?
Absolutely.
So he didn't take anything for granted. He didn't sit back and say,
No. This is moving for me. I love him so much.
Yeah.
This is true. He worked, his mother always said to him, Felix, are you working? And that crawled under his skin. It was the motion of his life, the motto, yeah? He was always working. He didn't skip a day. And he was writing and writing and writing and studying and reading and thinking and writing and writing, composing, organizing, conducting, studying. Yeah, this is unbelievable. And when I sit down, I started with the early pieces of Mendelssohn, and I stopped because I didn't have the right approach. And we changed the hall. It's again the Bösendorfer Imperial. It has to be for me. That's best friends. But I started now from the back.
Huh.
Yeah. And I started with the late works. And this was the magic door. Yeah.
Okay.
I have it now. So I think so. I mean, okay, later we can discuss it. But I feel good.
Well, and he's also one of these, I mean, he's unique in that he wrote, I mean, Mozart can claim this. Mendelssohn wrote pieces as a teenager, which were as mature as he wrote when he was 38. So there isn't really this huge gap between, if you there is with every other composer, you can see the learning process as you go forward or backward.
Yeah, but you can see it, you can feel it. Yeah, there is. I mean, I played the D minor, the double concert, the A minor, then the big, played his music through, random. But now, going from backwards, you see a really divine logic in his music.
Huh.
Yeah, you just have to give away for Mendelssohn, and it functions. If you start to make too much interpretation, what wants the poet to tell us here, it breaks. It must be in a flow.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote in his late music unbelievable, natural, great gestures, great thoughts, big lines. And, of course, virtuoso, but nothing is impossible. This is not Ursprung, yeah? I don't have to suffer.
he's alone in that.
And in the first music, you feel still, in the first pieces like Opus 5, the Caprice and these things, you feel the ambition. I'm a big virtuoso, yoo-hoo.
Yeah.
And this is not so heart-opening like the late
pieces.
Didn't
have to prove himself once again. Thank you.
Last time my guest Anna Maria Markovina and I met, she had just released a single disc of piano music by another forgotten composer, one to whom she is completely dedicated and devoted and about whom we've already spoken, the German composer and pedagogue Anton Urspruch, who lived from 1850 until 1907. My guest has now incorporated that single disc into a 3-CD set of all of Urspruch's piano music, and from the 3rd CD on that set, we'll hear her perform his 1891 Arabesque.
Okay, so the Mendelssohn is being worked on.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
It's not always a world premiere I'm doing.
No, but I mean, it'll be coming out sometime.
Yeah.
I got asked the question. who's next in line? Is there a next in line yet, or don't you know?
Oh, yeah. There is Stefan Heuke. He's alive.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
He's a living composer.
Okay.
This is also a passion. I was very lucky to, I was honored to perform the last concert, or the goodbye concert of our Bundestagspräsident.
Okay.
So this is the president, yeah. In our parliament, yeah. There were variations over our national anthem, which was never written again. Haydn himself wrote four variations for the piano. And on these four variations, there are the four pilaster on which the whole variation cycle is built. So
okay.
you hear variations from Heuke, and then you come back to Haydn, original, and then you hear Heuke and all. And the construction goes always in advance until you hardly understand the theme. Now, when I tell this, it doesn't sound really exciting, because it's well composed and it is how you write new music, but the piece is exciting. And I have the next one is to make the Uraufführung, the first performance of his third sonata.
Okay.
And then comes the Diabelli variations, and in 2020 his big piano concerto. So I will record all this. The next production is in September. I will record the Haydn variations, then comes the sonata. And so I play a lot of Stefan Heuke, big fan of him.
Mendelssohn isn't the only one who worked hard. you just have to watch out to do those, you know, the CPE was that 26 CD, and which like shot you down that black hole for a few months. You need a recovery time. You just have to keep doing these projects. They could keep sparking your mind. Well, it's great to talk with you again, and great to catch up with what you're doing, because what you're doing is really important stuff, and it opens our ears and lets us discover either something about a composer we thought we knew or something about a composer we never knew. Now, I did this with you last time on the phone, because I closed my Cadenza show with asking my guests the same questions, and it was, who did you want to meet? And we talked back then that you'd want to meet C.P.E. Bach, because you just finished this. If you got to meet Urspruch, I know that, but I mean, because he would meet somebody who was interested in his music and could play his music.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you tell him? I mean, if he'd show up and talk with you?
Well, I would try to understand this person. Urspruch is somebody who definitely locked out the public from his life.
Yeah.
And he made, what is the growing around the castle in the Sleeping Beauty? How do you call this?
Oh, the vines, yeah.
Yeah. So he made his vines around his music with this technical difficulty, so nobody can really, really conquest him.
Yeah.
And I would ask him not to let this grow. I would ask him to let the castle free. So the access would be a little bit easier.
But some composers, like you said with Mendelssohn, and even when you do the Greek, some composers can't write simple. It's not within their... They can't think that way. Do you think that was the
case
with him? He couldn't simplify.
I think he could. I feel that.
Right.
I think, and I know where and why and how. But I would find him very fascinating, and I would tell him that he is admired, because I think he was a little bit bitter. And also from his letters, I know that he has a certain bitterness towards life. And I would tell him that there is a big fan who loves his music and does everything, ruins the hand for his music.
You make his day. And Maria Markovina, thanks for taking some time again.
Thank you.
Happy to speak once again with pianist Anna Maria Markovina. You can find out more about her at her website, Anna, A-N-A, Markovina, MARKOVINA.com. The massive 26-CD set of the complete keyboard works of C.P.E. Bach, as well as the 3-CD set of all the piano music of Anton Urspruch, is released on the Hensler label and distributed in the U.S. by Naxos. You can find them at Naxos.com. The complete piano music of Anton Bruckner is also coming out on that label, as well as those Mendelssohn recordings of which she spoke. One last dip into the new Bruckner recording, I leave you with his short work entitled Erinnerung, or Memory. as performed by my guest today in an encore appearance, pianist Anna Maria Markovina. As always, I'm glad you're in the audience today, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.